Delphina here, and I've got a question, maybe a little challenge for everybody here. When is the last time you critiqued another webcomic creator's work? How did it go? How did it make you feel? And if the answers to those questions are never, terrible, horrible, then I want you to listen to a little jam that me, Miranda, Claire, and Crispy recorded called Critiquing from the Critiquer's View. It's over on Patreon at patreon.com/screentonescast for our supporters, along with goofs and bloopers and other secret stuff. If you enjoy what we make, please consider kicking us a couple bucks. And again, that's patreon.com/screentonescast. Thanks for listening.
Just do it! Don't let your dreams be dreams. Yesterday said tomorrow. So just do it! Face your dreams! I'm screwed!
Hello, and welcome to Screen Tones, where we talk anything and everything webcomics. Today, we're going to be talking about what makes a character real, or maybe not real enough, and what that means when you're engaging with them as a reader. I'm Verithane, my pronouns are she, they, and I make the webcomics Witchwood and Chabrault.
I'm Claire, also known as Clam, my pronouns are she, her, I make the webcomic Phantom Marine.
And I'm Ray, my pronouns are they, them, and I make the webcomics On Empyrean High and Overlord of Ravenfell.
And I'm Star, I use she, her pronouns, and my webcomic is Cast Off.
So, we all love creating characters. I know I'm speaking for myself here, but possibly for a lot of other folks, that the characters are kind of what make me get really excited about my comic. And while you're writing them, we want to make them feel as if they could be real people. But at the end of the day, characters are not actually real people. They act as tools to help us tell our stories, but still hopefully can come across as having a three-dimensional history and personality and be a complex person. So today we wanted to talk about how to interpret characters as storytelling tools and what to do if your audience gets a little too invested, and just kind of talk about the subject overall, because it's interesting. There's some interesting stuff here. So I'm going to go into the first question, which is, how important is it to you to figure out the purpose of your characters in the narrative? And that'll be Clam first.
Okay. I think I run into this problem where I feel bad because I actually try to think about characters as tools first versus, like, what's their personality? What do they look like? There's a few of my characters that have kind of sprung whole cloth from my brain as, like, this is a real person and I know exactly how they talk and I know what they're all about and I already know why they're there in the story. But there's more of them where I'm like, I don't know everything about you yet, but I know why you're here. And I think it doesn't happen too often, but I do notice some shows, movies, games even, where sometimes I'm like, I look at a character, I'm like, why are you here? Like, I might like you. I might realize that the author really likes you and clearly, like, wants you to be here. But at the end of the story, I kind of look back and I'm like, I don't know what purpose you served. Like, what were you trying to say? How did you reflect on the theme? What were you kind of in relation to the other characters? I think there's plenty of room sometimes for just, like, a character for character's sake, because you think that this would be fun or you think that it's appropriate, but even that is itself a tool. Like, having fun with a character and creating them as kind of a way to spice up the story is itself a tool. So I don't know. I think a lot about, like, starting from the storytelling viewpoint of, like, why do I want this character here? But then as the story goes on, like, every character that I've made that started that way has blossomed into something else, something more complex as the story went on. So I think, I don't know, I find it kind of a nice starting point to be like, what is your purpose? What do I want you to be? And how can I get you to be that, but then also a little bit more?
Yeah, it can be an interesting concept because there's definitely a balance between figuring out their utility for the story, but also making them still feel like you have that passion and personality and investment. And sometimes these things might jar up against each other. Before I get going on this too much, let's hear Ray's answer.
So for me, I do think it's very important to figure out what the purpose of your characters are in your narrative. A lot of my characters stem from RPs, so sometimes I have to pare them down to fit the narrative, or even sometimes I cut them depending on how much of my story is based off of the original roleplay. So I'll often look at it and go, you know, this is kind of bogging down the story. I need to cut this entire character from here because they aren't really contributing in other ways for what I want to be the main story. So I definitely think it's important in that aspect. And also, you don't really want to be like those multi-season shonen where certain characters finish their purpose, but they kind of just hang around there and cheer on the main character, but don't really do much else. I do find it more frustrating when a character hangs around with nothing to do that rather than being written out of the story some way. Because there's really nothing wrong with having certain characters take a back seat in the narrative once they fulfilled their purpose.
Yeah, I feel like we've all read stories like that in a lot of mainstream media, and manga tends to be awful for it because I think a lot of the publishers of those types of stories that are marketed to such a huge, like they expect big numbers from those series, and they'll run those polls with the readership to determine what the favorite characters are, like basically a popularity contest among the cast of the story. And whoever wins it, they get to stick around for the next season or the next arc or the next batch of chapters. But sometimes, like, what if, you know, a character that is not the author's favorite wins the popularity contest and now they have to keep them around, but they don't actually like them that much. So they're just kind of there. They're still in the story, but they don't have anything to do. It's definitely a thing that can happen. I see it and it's very frustrating.
That's my nightmare.
I know, right? But yeah, characters as marketing tools is definitely one way in which they can fulfill utility. And I got more thoughts on that one, but I'm going to let Star answer.
Yeah, so I actually have kind of a fun story for this one because I would say that most of my characters, not just in Cast Off, but also just in general, are created as like, I have a purpose for them first. I don't necessarily remember every single character. Okay, Vector, my main character, actually he came to me in a dream, quite literally. Yeah, I still cringe a little bit telling that story. But so
that's amazing.
Thank you. I fever dream in college after a color theory class. Anyway. But yeah, so it's like I just, this Blorbo descended from the heavens and was like, make a webcomic about me. And I was like, give me like 4 years.
Yes, and master.
So, you know, sometimes that happens. And I have other characters where it's like, okay, I need this character. This character needs someone to talk to in this scene. And so I just make up a weird little dude. And then what usually happens 9 times out of 10 is that weird little dude will evolve into like this whole actual character. Like I'll have just like, I need you for one scene. And they're like, what if I was one of your favorite characters actually? And I'm like, oh no, well now I have to keep you around because you've entered Blorbo status. I think the weirdest way a character has ever wormed their way into a story, actually, if we go really far back, this has happened multiple times in Cast Off, because the thing was, when I was first developing Cast Off, I had another webcomic going at the time, and Cast Off's storyline was, I made up this character, and they're too weird and fantasy to fit in my current, like, modern-day setting webcomic. So I'm going to put them in this side project that I've been working on forever, and I'll find a spot for them. And if I can't, I'll put them somewhere else. And that's how Frankie made it into the story. One of, like, I would say probably the most popular character in the comic came from an art collaboration I did with friends. Have you guys ever done the thing where you like one person sketches a character and then one person inks it and then one person draws it and you like go around in a circle and you do that. Frankie came from one of those. I just drew this character with like this weird clock robot eye. And then I was like, I like him. I'm going to keep him. And I just yeeted him into the story. And I was like, I'll find a use for you. And now he is legitimately one of the most popular characters in the comic. I don't control this.
Whomst among us does.
So the answer is, it's like a 50-50 shot. Sometimes it's important. Sometimes I just catch Blorbo disease. And I'm like, well, you live here now. I will find a use for you.
A lot of my characters, since they were from RPs, also came like, well, I need my character to talk to this person. And then suddenly they have a personality, so I have to name them. And then I have to draw them.
Oh, well, if you're going to name them, then you got to do this thing. And if you're going to do this thing, then you might as well like do that thing.
It's like when you take home a stray, you've named it, it's too late.
Yeah. You got attached.
The cat distribution services. Sometimes there's just a Blorbo distribution
service.
Yes. The Blorbo adopts you. You don't have a choice.
This is what Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends was about.
Oh, God. For my own stuff, I think that that whole thing, actually similar to Ray, a lot of my characters started in some way from some kind of like, if not RP, something kind of adjacent to it, like playing. So some of them come all the way back from like playing pretend in like elementary school and just getting these little seeds of characters who evolved in a totally organic setting where there was no real plan. Like there wasn't a framework of story to put them into. They were just kind of like, oh, I have this little person just kind of at the back of my mind who I think, you know, well, here's what their personality is like and here's kind of what they look like and they have a name. And I would like just kind of pull them out when I was like hanging out with other people. The main duo in Geralt evolved out of a paint chat RP where I would draw a character on the screen and then other people would interact with them and poke them, and bother them and draw bugs beside them. And then like, oops, turns out that they're afraid of bugs. That's where Kieran's fear of bugs came from fundamentally. Is because people were interacting with this guy in a paint chat setting. There was no utility. There's no plot that I was trying to put this character into initially. And then I was like, but I like this guy. I like this like dynamic that I've kind of built up with these other interactions. So maybe I'll think of a way that I could put them into a story. And I started constructing Geralt. And I feel like the beginning of a lot of my stories starts that way, where I'm sort of seeing them more as people and not thinking about them as tools in a narrative. But then the more elaborate the story gets, it needs more characters. And I mean, like you guys were saying, like, well, they need somebody to talk to in this scene, or somebody has to come and initiate this next plot device. Because if they're just alone in a room with nobody to talk to, that's not a story. They need things to do, which probably includes other people. And some of those other people would enter the story as tools and then slowly get more and more fleshed out. But I feel like the farther along in the story it gets, the further the needle swings towards the tool side of it. A character introduced in like chapter 3 is more likely to be one of the Blorbos who's been repurposed for it, or someone who I kind of put in and I'm like, I'm going to leave room for this person to evolve organically. But the characters who get introduced in like chapter 15 or 16, I need to have a plan at that point. I'm entering like the main thrust of the plot. I'm starting to think about how I'm going to end this thing. And any piece that I put into that puzzle, which is already huge and sprawling, I can't let it grow too much. Otherwise, it's just going to explode the story and add another 100 pages to it. And so I'm a lot more strict with those later characters who are definitely much more introduced to be to serve a function.
How many hundreds of pages have you added to your stories, Thane?
Redacted. It's a multiple number.
A few.
And what's 100 pages? What could it hurt?
It's just 100 pages. No big deal.
What's the harm? It's fine. Do it for your Blorbos.
I won't say how much was added over my initial plan because I didn't really have a concrete picture of how long Geralt was going to be when I started, but it clocked in at 1,267 pages. And Witchwood is at about 700 right now, with probably another 500 to go. And I did plan on having that one be like 500 pages when I started. I don't know what I was thinking. I don't think my brain works that way. I can't make things short.
What's a short story? I've never seen one before.
Yep.
I don't think they exist.
Oh, there is one other thing that I did want to mention before I go into the next question, which is that the characters who do get introduced, regardless of whether they're a tool or whether they're people, I feel like there still has to be some seed of passion to them if they're not just going to be like they appear for one scene, if they're a part of the main cast. And there's one example of a character like who fails kind of on both metrics, which is unfortunately, the main character of Final Fantasy XII, Vaughn. And the story of that game's production was a little bit troubled. It was sort of written by a whole bunch of committees who all had different ideas of where they wanted the plot to go. And each of those kind of committees, they had like their favorite characters. So they would get a lot of development and investment. And so you had some really strong characters in the primary cast. But then the executives of the company itself needed to have a marketable teenager for the audience to latch onto because that was the target demographic of the game. And they required that the writers add a young, relatable protagonist to be the figurehead of the whole project. And then the trouble was, like, they did the creators did it. They had to. But I feel like you can kind of tell that none of them had a plan for this character. So they're there the whole time. They have a little bit of a setup connecting them to the plot very loosely, but then no further development. And so they're the main character, but they feel like a footnote, like they could just exist in the background of a scene. And I feel like that's a situation that I would really want to avoid. Like, so regardless of what the character is for, if you have to force them in, it's probably going to be a problem.
My favorite redeemed version of a character like that is actually one that I know you will absolutely be like, yes, yes, that one. And it's Enzo Matrix from Reboot.
Yes, yes.
I know they, like, the original story is they had to put in, like, a kid character. This is a Saturday morning cartoon. There are adult characters that are, like, the heroes and the villains, but the producers were very specific. They're like, we need a kid character that's, like, the focal point for the audience because, of course, the kids aren't looking at the adults being like, they're so cool. They need like a kid to tell them to look at the adults and think that they're cool for some reason. And so like Enzo, if you've never seen Reboot, Enzo starts out as like this super hyperactive kid. He's super, you know, into everything. He's excited.
Like the plucky little brother.
Yeah, he's the plucky little brother. But as the show goes on, like the things that they do with this character are so interesting and so fascinating. And they take what was originally like a studio mandate and they make him into one of the most complex characters on the show. They hurt him like emotionally. And then he grows from that. And then he has to grow even more from the growing of that. Like there's so many layers to just one character that originally was just like, you have to include this. And I'm so happy that they did that in the end.
I've never seen this show, and so hearing out of context, they took this child and they hurt him and just sounding so excited about that. I was like, whoa, what's going on up there?
I promise it's actually like,
it's really good.
Time it's really good. Is involved. Yes, time travel is involved.
I see.
So I guess kind of the moral of this story is, I mean, the whole idea of a studio mandate is not something that most webcomic artists are going to have to be dealing with, generally by virtue of like all of us are doing this kind of on our own impetus. But I think there are sometimes the pressure of like trying to make something that will become popular. It is possible that people might feel like they need to have something shaped like this in the story in order to become popular. And I feel like just make sure that you like the thing if you're going to do anything like that.
So what you're saying, I shouldn't do a redeemed villainess.
I mean, if you really want that, if you love it, if you love it and want to do it, then do it. But if you don't love it and you feel like you have to do it just because it's going to be popular, I don't know, maybe think about that one.
Nah.
So I do want to start getting into the next question, which is, has there been a character in your work or in another work that you love where you think readers treat their behavior as if they're real? And what do people think of them? And why do you think that that is? I'm going to toss this one over to Clam.
Yes. Yes, I have those. And it's simultaneously like it's an honor to have readers like become that invested in a character. But also there have been a couple of occasions where I'm just like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, I'm very glad that you are thinking this deeply and feeling this deeply about what this character is doing. But I want to gently take your hand and like, let's go get a coffee. Let's go calm down. Like this character is not real. Ultimately, like at the end of every day, like these characters are not real. They represent real things and real emotions, often ones that I've had. Like, I think the reason that sometimes these characters do, I guess, elicit these responses is it does feel real and it comes from a real place. I've had two instances with both of my villains. One is kind of the sad wet cat villain and one is like the legit evil, like angry, vindictive one. And I've had such interesting responses on a couple different occasions on the moments where they really lose it. They become so emotional about their situations that they kind of break down. And it has been really interesting to see on those specific pages, like those are the ones where I get a comment where somebody gets, it's like they're trying to write the rest of the character's story before I have even explained the whole thing. Because they've seen a kernel of truth in that character's response that they then relate to their own experience with other people. And they're like, oh, this must be what's going on. And unfortunately for me, sometimes that kind of A to B to C through line goes in a direction that I don't intend in their head. And I can't control that. Sometimes, you know, I think like, oh, did I write it wrong? Did I give the wrong impression? Oftentimes, I think it from the comment itself, I usually just get the sense that this person has a history and I've unlocked that history a little bit. And part of me is like, I'm amazed that that happened, but I almost feel sorry because I'm like, I didn't mean to you know, bring out this memory for you or this interpretation. Like, I'm just sitting here making my Barbie dolls angry, like realistically, but for you it was something much more. So I think about it a lot where like I love that people would interpret a character as like this is a real person with a real emotion that I am reacting to. But you also have to look back and see, you know, me doing the little, you know, shadow puppets on the cave wall and be like, oh, wait, like, Claire's doing this. Claire is in control of this. These characters are not real. Maybe I should just be talking to Claire and being like, hey, what do you mean with this? Before I launch into a tirade about this character is, you know, interpreting this poorly or this character shouldn't be behaving like this. When I'm like, hang on, I have more to say. Please don't go too far with it. But yeah, I don't know. I'm of two minds. I'm like, thank you for caring that much, but also you don't need to care that much, please.
It feels all too easy for people to forget that with webcomics or any serialized thing that isn't complete yet, you're only ever seeing a part of the picture, I guess, depending on the work itself, because I see people do it with TV shows as well. Like an yes. episode comes out and it's like, oh, this is so problematic or something like that. And it's like, well, it's not done. Yeah.
It gets explained like 2 weeks later and you're like, oh, but people don't apologize for jumping too far ahead. So like,
you want to be like, well, don't you feel silly now? But like, no, social media's moved on.
Yeah, exactly.
How about you, Ray?
Unfortunately, I do think a lot of people tend to take characters as real people way too seriously a lot these days. I do think some of it stems from purity culture and belief that your morals are reflected in the kinds of media that you read. But, you know, sadly, that's something that a lot of times just has to be cured by time. I do think that a lot of people also need to give a bit more grace in the types of stories that these characters appear in. You know, the people that always comment in theater about for like a horror movie, oh, why are they going in that dark hallway? Don't they know that they're going to be murdered? It's like, no, they don't. That's the kind of story that this is. But I also think that treating characters as real people often especially seems to affect villains, because you get a lot of people that just hate villains. They don't understand why people like them. And a lot of people that tend to like them are people that appreciate them as narrative tools, because they tend to be very active parts of the story rather than reactive. And I especially appreciate them doing everything in the story in service of their goal, and the people that reduced them to like, oh, this character is just a war criminal. It's like, yes, but he's actually giving the protagonist something to do because he's a war criminal. So I definitely do think that sometimes just treating these characters as people doesn't consider the genre or their role a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's definitely can get awkward with certain genres too, like especially if readers need to like the characters, like the characters and the things that they're reading. The additional assumption would be that the person making it also has to like and agree with all the characters in it. But I think if that were the case, then the whole horror genre, especially the slasher genre, would just have to not exist. Like, you can't really reconcile it with that worldview.
Yes, I definitely have several things to say about that. But first, one of the things that I wanted to say was, I feel like as humans, we are prone to looking at something that is not human and applying human traits to it, which is one of the reasons why this happens so often. I mean, how often have you been like taking a walk and you see a tree and there's like just the perfect shape of just like some knots in the tree and it looks like a face? It's literally three circles and you in your brain assign it a face and say, oh, it's a character now.
Oh, like the people that put googly eyes on their Roombas. Yes. and call it pet names, and then they get sad when they get stuck.
Yeah, Divine
I
Beast
do
Va
love
Roomba.
Those
That's what mine is called. He's been broken for several months.
That's amazing.
Oh, wait, no, I'm characterizing him.
Yeah, exactly. You've done it. You've done the thing. You just did. Do you see? We've done a live demonstration for you, podcast listener. But yeah, just kind of feeding off what Thane says is that sometimes people just, they see a character in a work who was designed as a tool. They were designed to tell a story, and maybe the tool is not always morally correct. Maybe the villain character needs to do bad things in order to be a villain. Now, that on its own is not necessarily a bad thing, because that's how the story happens, is that bad things happen. Protagonist, you know, in general wants to set out to stop the bad thing from happening. That can be any scale from like massive save the world fantasy to just more nuanced mall stuff. It's like, oh, this guy stole my friend's dog and I have to go get it back, that kind of thing. The problem will come in, and I have had people do this to me many times, where they see a villain or even just like a character who's not a nice person or a good person or like a morally okay person. They have nuance, they have flaws, and they say, wow, that person in this story just did a bad thing. That means that the person who made them is okay with people doing this bad thing. And then I get called a war criminal over something that happened in my webcomic. And I'm like, no, we've gone too far. I need you to turn around and figure out what road you turned down, because this is not the right one that you're supposed to be on. Just go away. This
but
has happened.
Star, you drew all those dead people. They're dead now.
We are dragging you to The Hague as we speak.
No!
You will stand trial.
No! I'll have you know I'm gonna sit. Thanks. But no, like just like one example of this is I have a character in Cast Off who is barely a character. I did not even give this guy a name. He is just Cart Guy to me. And his whole purpose in the storyline is to drive a cart that gets the characters from point A to point B and drop some exposition, be a douchebag, and then get the shit kicked out of him. Like, that is the end of his character arc, is he's an asshole, and then he gets the shit beat out of him. And I've had people just, you know, like make memes with this character because they think he's just like, he's so shallow, he's fun to dunk on. And I have gotten anonymous hate comments from people being like, wow, I can't believe that Star put this character in her comic. That must mean that she is also racist. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Did you not get that this is not a character we are supposed to be rooting for? Did you need me to like show him getting killed on screen to make sure that you understand I'm not on his side? Like, what? Where? How?
One of the interesting things I've always found about a lot of these feelings for these characters is they often only take this one certain part of their personality and extrapolate from it. And sometimes they don't even take the overall character development of the character in. They just take their initial first impression of it and run with that. Which I've seen it with some characters like in Final Fantasy where, oh, they're an asshole at first, but then they like kind of sacrifice themselves for the greater good or something like that. But people are still going, oh, why do you like that character? He just did this one thing that ruined everything. And it's like, because I like the complete arc of his character. Not just that one tiny bit where he's being a jerk.
But he committed war crimes on screen. That means you like war criminals.
Oh, I guess I do. Oops.
And I will now judge you for it forever. And I will send you anonymous hate messages on Tumblr.com.
Man, I feel like most of my thoughts on this subject have been pretty amply covered by everything else. But I will say that the idea that every character in a story needs to be a role model or to embody good behavior or practices or thought or whatever is just not something that I think should be applied to media that's not aimed explicitly at children. That sort of stuff is suitable for stuff aimed at a very young audience, but we should expect more from adult or older teen readers. They can think about what they're reading. They can interpret things. They should have critical thinking at that point and can be able to draw their own conclusions.
And once you reach a certain age, you too will start to enjoy the messy mother and you will have fun with them and watch them screw up and be like, haha, he's just like me.
But fictional.
I just wonder how people, like, I imagine the kind of people that want every character to be perfect. They must be so bored. They must reach a day where there's just something goes off in their head and they're like, every character is the same. Every character is like this perfect cocoa melon child of perfection. Like, where is
sanitized
the juice?
Like, I think some of it might be them wanting to get away from everything bad in the world.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. I've noticed cozy fantasy and stuff like that has become very, very common right now. And that's probably because a lot of people are tired of that. But at the same time, I don't know. I've never been one to stick with one kind of story. Sometimes I will want, you know, my happy brain rot that doesn't actually have any characters that are developing and turn into like giant kaiju and eat people or something, but all for fun. But sometimes I want stuff that's dark because there's that catharsis in it. But I don't know. Yeah.
It's a big world and people like different things. Imagine that.
Imagine that. Yeah. It's the people that can't comprehend that people like different things. It kind of makes me.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So the third question that I've got for you guys is, what are some pitfalls that you see writers fall into when they treat characters too much like people in their story? Start with Clam.
I can speak to my very early writing scenarios, like when I was like 8 to 12 years old, and I had like these forever stories that just kept going on and on that I was writing. And I never thought about characters as pieces in a puzzle or in a chess game or anything like that. What I did was I just grabbed character archetypes that I liked from other shows and other movies and games. And I was like, I like you as a character. I think you're cool. You're going in my story. And it was a great sandbox to play in until I started realizing, like, why are they here? Why are they here apart from me just thinking they're cool, or their design is awesome, or I like their powers or whatever. And I think it's something that I pick up on in, I guess, specifically webcomics nowadays, if I read them, where, like, I love seeing webcomics where clearly somebody has made these characters and put them in a webcomic because they think that they're the coolest character ever, or like, you know, oh, this character is so hot, I drew a hot guy and now, like, I have to put him in this comic and I have to make him kiss somebody. Like, I see that and I'm like, I understand, I see you, I totally get it. But I think when you get a cast that's just characters that you think are cool, and then you don't know exactly what they're doing, like, they're just kind of going through a world that you make that you also think is cool for whatever reason. And, like, a lot of it just kind of comes down to, what moves are these game pieces making? Are they just on the page being awesome and you're drawing them and you think, like, I just love this character? Or are you thinking, like, where is this character starting? Where do you want them to get? How are they going to get there? How do they bounce off of the other characters in this world? It's one thing to kind of do it like D&D, where everybody brings a character to, you know, a new campaign. And I think the ones where you don't have, like, a session zero, where it's like, what is the mood of this story going to be? Where everybody kind of understands what their role is, how they might tie into what the overall vibe of the campaign is. You get a lot of, like, crazy stuff just kind of thrown together because people think it's cool. And I think I notice that in webcomics sometimes, where I think it's great for, like, a first draft of a webcomic where you're just trying stuff and you're playing with these characters that you think are just awesome. But then when I feel like there's a lot of webcomics where I see that moment where the author is like, I don't know what else they are. I don't know what they are beyond being cool. And then sometimes they either abandon the comic or they twist it into something new or they restart it. But it basically is like they've played with these cool archetypes enough where they're like, I know what kind of story I want to be telling with these characters. And I think everybody kind of has to go through that phase where they're like, what am I doing? Like, I've made this thing. What is it for? But I think that's where it can get really cool and really beautiful, being like, I like these kinds of characters. What sort of stories are they good in? So, yeah, it's something that I went through. I see it in other stories. I think it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's just a starting point.
It's like ingredients in food in a way.
Yeah.
You can really like two separate sets of ingredients, but being able to recognize when they will pair well with each other and when they won't really maybe go together. Maybe I don't want ham and cheese in my chocolate chip cookie. I want it in a different different kind of pastry.
Well, you have to be adventurous sometimes, but no, I think exactly.
Spoken like someone who's never made chocolate chip and bacon cookies.
I specifically said ham, cheese, bacon.
Ham is like one step away from bacon.
Story.
And what is cheese if not milk? Is what you put cookies in. Checkmate.
All right, so I expect you to make some ham and cheese and chocolate chip cookies and then mail them to me.
I want cookies now.
Me too. <him. laughs> Go straight to the kitchen after this.
Oh, yes, I've got string cheese waiting for me. I'm going to put it in a cookie.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, back on topic.
So for me, I think a lot of the pitfalls that people fall into is not giving their character enough to do and not bouncing off of the other characters a lot, because they have all these cool characters. They're individually cool, but a lot of times they don't think about how they interact with each other. And I think that just makes me think of this one guy who, oh, he roleplayed such a cool character, but when it came to interacting with other ones, he just sat in a corner and just, you know, glowered at everyone, and that was essentially what he did, because he was a really big fan of all those fantasy stories of lone wolf characters. So when it came to actually role-playing one of those, he didn't put too much thought into giving his character a motivation enough to interact with other people in a role-play. And another thing that I think a lot of people fall into when they view characters a bit too much as real people and don't consider the narrative is that they're really afraid of making their character be wrong or make mistakes or do bad things, when honestly a lot of these are the best opportunities for your characters to grow. So often these kinds of journeys are actually what makes a lot of characters enjoyable, but they can't do that if you won't allow them to essentially have a messy moment.
Yeah, I think that thing that's definitely a great point about these things. I feel like there's a lot of stories out there where people have written in a character who they relate to on a personal level, who might be like unmotivated and depressed and have like this constellation of personality traits that are like a real person. They feel very relatable. But with a character like that, you have to really go out of your way as the author to constantly come up with things for them to be doing. And at a certain point, to keep the story interesting, it's going to get very difficult, and you're going to have a hard time getting the readers to like this character. Even if they relate to them, they might not be a great choice for a protagonist of a story if they're not active in the plot. And even if it might be realistic that way, like this is like a real person, they're fundamentally not a real person. They're a fictional character in a story, and you have to challenge them like a fictional character and not like a real person.
You can't have them sitting in the corner for the entire story. Even if they want to, they still need to get in the robot.
At some point, yes. The robot's got to come here. This is my real lesson. Put a robot in there.
Put a robot in there. And make your protagonist get in.
Yeah.
How about you, Star?
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of I can't think of any specific examples, but I know that I've definitely seen this. And I feel like I definitely probably used to do this with some of my earlier writings, like when I was a wee bab that never made it onto the internet, thank God, where I'm going to call it world building disease, but with characters, where it's like you write so much interesting, crazy, is like you write every single thing about a character. You write their entire backstory. You fleshed out every single human being that they have ever interacted with. And you just fall so in love with them. And you want everyone who reads your story to know everything about this character that you do. And then it's just, it's too much. And what happens is sometimes people will do that with every character in their story. And it's like, I can't start my webcomic. I don't know what my MC's favorite color is. I have to go back to the drawing board right now. And they want these characters to be grounded, realistic people so badly. They're focusing on the wrong thing, I feel, where it's like, you don't need to know every single thing about your character for them to feel real and interesting to an audience. And, you know, if you're just making characters for funsies for them to live in your head and for you to throw metaphysical dodgeballs at them and see what happens, then that's one thing. But you're listening to a web comics podcast, and you're 45 minutes-ish into this episode, so I assume if you've listened this far, you're interested in making a comic with that Blorbo McBlorboson at some point. And just, your audience does not need to know every single thing. You are giving your story character bloat when you have 20-plus main characters, and most of the story is them trauma dumping on each other, which I feel, like I said, it's nothing super recently, but I do feel like I have definitely seen this, and I'm just like, I am not interested in this. Please, story, please.
This was actually one of the problems I had with my original comic, because it was based off of a role play. And oh my gosh, one of the people that I role played with just loved having their character trauma dump on everything, on everywhere. And he was such a sad, wet cat that he didn't even have the motivation to do anything about it. And I'm just like, that's not a story, though. How am I supposed to fit him in the story? So I had to tone that back down a lot because, you know, he is a narrative tool, not a character. I mean, not a person, because he just was like a square shape trying to go in a round hole kind of thing that just didn't fit the story.
I'm imagining a webcomic that's just the author describing their therapy sessions. And it's just like, there's no story. It's just, I'm just telling you my feelings. I'm telling you them for 10 chapters at a time. Then maybe something happens. Then we're back to therapy. And it's like, no, this is not a story. This is a meditation. These can both exist.
Sometimes that can be cathartic, but it might not find an audience.
Exactly.
I was going to make a self-deprecating joke, is that this is what the pilot of Cast Off was like.
Oh, do tell.
The very, very first try at Cast Off that I wrote for I wrote a one-shot that ended in a cliffhanger that was basically chapter one for a school anthology. And it was basically just, like, the sequence of events was very similar to what the final version ended up being, like the one you can read online now, but it was basically just new person walks into Vector's life. He spends like 12 pages trauma dumping on a stranger. And it's like, what? Oh, I look back on this and I'm like, why am I here? I'm in hell.
Sometimes you need to get that part out. Just get it out and then focus on the story.
See, the problem is that my freaking readers like to fancy themselves a little bit of Sherlock Holmes, and they go digging for my art that's like 15 years old, and they post them on the Discord for everyone to see, and it's like they're showing my skivvies to everyone, and I'm like, no, put that back from where it came from, or so help me.
Oh, no. It must go on the Pepe Sylvia wall.
They've like found my sketch dumps that I posted to DeviantArt in like 2007. Those drawings are older than some of the people in my Discord, and they're just posting them in there and being like, wow, look at Star's old art, smiley face. And I'm like, get that shit out of here right now. Get that shit out of here.
Do not perceive me.
Do not. It's like, there's part of me that, okay, I'm not gonna say, oh, I wish I had nuked my DeviantArt, because, you know, it's an archive, it's a treasure trove, and I'm glad that I have it, but stop reminding me, random strangers in my Discord, stop it. Taking your toys away.
I feel like most authors have to go through some kind of a phase like that of just getting out all the, like, the id, the everything. You know, it's the exploratory phase. You just gotta get it done and then move on and start honing the craft, as it were.
You have to make bad art before you can make good art, but stop looking at the bad art!
I do have a question for all of you. What's your character's favorite food?
Don't do this to me. Cookies. I don't even know what my favorite food is. You think I think about that shit for my Blorbos?
No, wait. Sandwiches.
Is it a ham and cheese sandwich with chocolate?
No, yeah! No. It's pizza. No, wait. It's sushi.
Ham
no,
and cheese
wait.
Cookie.
It's
You
apples.
Can't make a story without knowing this.
My favorite is when I'll do like a ask me some questions on Tumblr thing, and somebody's like, what is the favorite food of each of your characters? And I'm like,
time to make some shit up.
Yeah,
I actually did.
I did that too when I took Tumblr asks. Of course, then I get the weirdest one, like, how long does it take Rosin to scoop the litter boxes of all his evil cat minions?
Well, how long does it take?
Yes, tell us. We're all sitting here.
How many cats are there? How many litter boxes? You know, you have to have one litter box per cat minimum.
No, you're technically supposed to have one more litter box than you have cats.
Well, yes, I have two cats and two bathrooms. So,
and on each level, and he lives in an evil overlord tower. So I don't know. I don't even know how many levels that is. Oh man, I'm bad at
world. You don't know how many levels your evil tower is? What? Oh, how could you start writing a comic without knowing this critical information? My God,
it does surprise people though, because like the number of people that ask me, like, oh, you must have the tome of information on every character and like know every birthday and everything, and I'm just, I don't know. I don't.
I'm making this up.
If it's not important in my story, if it's not a plot point, if it doesn't affect the way things are going, I don't need it. Why do I need to know?
My brain is empty and it is smooth.
It doesn't mean that you're like a bad character mom or dad. Like, you're just like, I don't know. I am thinking about the characters as, I don't know, like, what are their video game stats? I'm not thinking about beyond that. And like, maybe that's a clue to just be like, okay, all of these little extra things that you think that authors know and very deeply care about regarding their characters, maybe it's a sign that you don't need to care about it that much. Maybe think about, what are they being used for? What is the purpose of this character? Not what is their birthday. The birthday doesn't matter. I'm sorry.
If their birth date is the prophecy date, which is critical to the
story.
That's
fine. That's perfectly fine.
I do know a few people that use zodiacs as a way to guide where their characters are like going to interact with other characters. Ooh. But at this, or kind of like how some people use the blood type, going like, oh, this type of blood type doesn't get along with this one, kind of thing. But that's really just superstition that can help you brainstorm. It's not really that important. And I don't even know which zodiac my characters are. Oh my, I'm such a bad character parent.
Shame.
Shame. I knew, so this is something that I've done with both my webcomics, where my protagonist's birthday is the day the comic started, and I just, that's how I remember.
That's a good.
And then I worked that into the story and cast off. That's actually a plot point. But then I was like, they wouldn't have April in this fantasy universe. So then I had to come up with a fantasy calendar. And then while I was doing that, I'm like, yeah, fuck it, we ball. I'll make birthdays for the other characters. And that was less than a year ago. And I've been doing this comic for almost 11 years. And I'm just like, yeah, sure, you're a Virgo. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, as someone who has also made my own fantasy calendar, because I was just like, but Julius Caesar didn't exist in this world, so it's not going to be called July.
Oh, exactly. that gets so messy so quickly. Oh no.
I feel like this is a huge can of worms.
see,
we're going to add another half hour to this episode.
With cast off, I just went by farming simulator rules. There's 4 months and they're just named after the season and they're just long.
I was a nerd and I made mine 10 months like the original Roman calendar.
Wow. Tangent!
Oh, yeah, tangent. Okay.
Cool tangent.
That does seem like a wrap. Maybe one
like
with
a good place.
I think so, or else we're just going to keep yapping.
Yes.
I like a good rap to end the episode. That's good.
Is it going to be ham and cheese with chocolate?
No.
Okay.
Please.
No.
Please. No. Please.
I've decided this.
No.
No.
I'm adding the cheese whiz. I'm adding the cheese whiz to the baking stuff.
I'm adding salami.
No. I have a favorite. Oh, man. Anyway, that is a roasted red pepper and goat cheese and maybe a little ham and cheese.
Yay.
Thank you so much for listening. I've been your host, Vera Thane. You can check out my work at chiralt.sevensmith.net or witchwoodcomic.com.
I have been Claire Clam. You can find my work at fantamarine.com.
And I've been Ray, and you can find my work at empyreancomic.com and Overlord of Ravenfell on Webtoon.
And I'm Star, and you can find my comic cast off at castoff-comic.com.
And we'll see you later, slappers.
Thought you were going to say it. Salami.
Yeah, me too.
Salami.
Is... Salami with the salami.
Oh, I should have. You're right. I should have done that.
Thank you for listening to Screen Tones, a webcomic podcast. You can find all our episodes at screentonescast.com. We've got a couple links over there to our Ko-fi and merch shop, where your support will help us create more episodes and keep us talking about anything and everything webcomics. You can also find us on YouTube, Blue Sky, Tumblr, and our Discord server. Thank you so much for listening, sharing, rating, and supporting, and we'll see you next time.